Welcome to Undisclosed. If you want to make sure Undisclosed gets the support it needs to put on this episode, then check out Stamps.com and The Great Courses Plus, our supporters this week. We'll tell you how you can find out more about them later on in the program. Until then, enjoy.
Honestly, my heart broke for them. I could like feel the, I could just kind of feel, especially with the father, you could just feel like this exhaustion and weariness, and he,
I don't want to say broken, but it's kind of the worst case of mine.
Yeah, you're right. He seems broken to me. It reminds me a little bit of Adnan's, although Adnan's dad is so broken that he just can't even engage in sixth sense. But you could just, I could just sense like a desperation. And you know, that scares me a little bit because it's scary to give somebody hope, right?
Yeah.
Because the terror is, like, if it just, it doesn't work.
Yep.
Earlier this summer, Susan, Colin, and I met up in Rome, Georgia. It's a far cry from the bustling, busy, gritty streets of Baltimore to the sleepy, laid-back town of Rome. Susan, who will be explaining her connections to the town a little bit later, had already been there a number of times during her investigation, but it was the first time Colin and I would be heading to the town where this case unfolded 16 years ago. Now, I'll admit, I was a bit nervous. I knew we'd be heading fairly far from Atlanta, into an area where folks might not be used to someone who looks like me, and into an area where Confederate flags are not an infrequent sight, which is something that I'm not used to. But the trip was necessary. We needed to see not just where Isaac was killed, but to understand the community, the people, and most importantly, to understand Joey, who is over a decade into a life sentence for a crime he likely did not commit. But first, we're going to do a quick check-in with Colin, who's going to tell us about our first sponsor today, Stamps.com.
Getting your mailing and shipping done can seem like a no-win situation. Going to the post office takes up valuable time. Can't tell you how many times I've wasted an hour or two sending a package, especially during the holiday season. And leasing a postage meter is expensive, with multi-year commitments and hidden fees. Luckily, I know a better way. Stamps.com. It's what the Undisclosed team is using during Season 2 because we all live in different places. With Stamps.com, you can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package right from your desk using your own computer and printer. In fact, I just printed out some postage now. I'm sending some letters trying to track down some court records. You even get special postage discounts you can't find at the post office. Plus, Stamps.com is more powerful than a postage meter, at just a fraction of the cost. You can save at least 50% compared to a postage meter, and you'll avoid those time-consuming trips to the post office. Right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use the promo code UNDISCLOSED for this special offer. It's a 4-week trial, plus a $110 bonus offer, including postage and a digital scale. So don't wait. Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in UNDISCLOSED. That's Stamps.com. Enter UNDISCLOSED.
Welcome to the second episode of the new season of Undisclosed, The State versus Joey Watkins. My name is Rabia Chaudhry. I'm an attorney and fellow at the U.S. Institute of Peace, and I'm joined with my colleagues, Colin and Susan, who will introduce themselves.
I'm Susan Simpson. I'm an attorney with the Volkov Law Group, and I blog at viewfromll2.com.
I'm Colin Miller. I'm an associate dean and professor at the University of South Carolina School of Law, and I blog at Evidence Prof Blog.
Now, throughout today's episode, you're going to be hearing a lot of audio clips from our trip to Rome. You'll be hearing from the three of us, of course, but also from Claire Gilbert, the attorney from the Georgia Innocence Project who brought us the case, also from Joey's parents, from Joey himself, and other folks we also met. To begin with, though, we want to tell you a little bit about how we connected with the case. And rather than us tell you the story, we reached out to Claire from the Georgia Innocence Project and talked to her about how she first got involved and eventually made the decision to reach out to us to investigate the case for Undisclosed second season.
Before we hear from Claire, a couple of notes about the history of the Georgia Innocence Project and their mission. In 1992, after advances in DNA testing, Barry Scheck and Peter Neufeld started the Innocence Project in New York, which has the goal of righting wrongful convictions. A decade later, two Georgia State law students approached the Georgia Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers and asked, "Why can't we do this here?" 14 years later, the Georgia Innocence Project has much the same mission as its New York counterpart, but with considerably fewer resources. According to the Atlanta magazine, this is a threadbare operation that relies on the idealism of unpaid law students who take up residence at the mismatched desks or cluster around a small table in front of the executive director's desk. One favors a private spot in a utility closet. They pore over the tales of rapists and murderers, giving each claim of innocence a fair shot. Somewhere in these piles is another person sitting in a cold cell, breathing stale, cigarette-stained air, doing time for a crime he didn't commit. The interns long to find him, the innocent, the one they can exonerate. Now here's Claire talking about Joey's case in her own words.
So the first time Georgia Innocence Project got involved in Joey's case was pretty much around 2012. And I believe that Joey and his family had written to us before that, but it was just one of many letters that come through claiming innocence. And what stood out especially was that we were contacted by an attorney by the name of Bill O'Dell. Bill O'Dell had been a family lawyer for Joey's family for many, many years and was co-counsel, essentially, in Joey's trial and lead counsel in Mark Free's trial. And following the acquittal of Mark and conviction of Joey, Bill O'Dell fought for years and years and years to prove that Joey was innocent. And so this culminated in 2012. He reached out to the Georgia Innocence Project and convened a meeting with the Georgia Innocence Project, the GBI, the Georgia Bureau of Investigations, Bill O'Dell, and Joey's second habeas attorney, Bud Seaman. And at the meeting, Bill made a presentation about the many reasons why Joey was innocent, mainly focusing on the cell phone evidence and an alternate suspect. So after the meeting, Bill pushed to have the GBI involved. The GBI said that they were not going to get involved unless a government entity requested it. So someone high up in the GBI, I can't remember his name right now, met with the prosecutor's office, and that was Lee Patterson at the time, and asked them to reopen this, and they declined, and then it was dropped. So we didn't have much more involvement after that because we're very, very tight budget, lots and lots of cases, very limited resources. And we didn't really look at Joey's case again until 2014, when a volunteer lawyer came along. His name is Rick Latta. And he spent probably between 6 and 8 months looking at the case, just Joey's case. And he did a great job making timelines and gathering documents and trying to figure out what was going on. But he had to eat, and he was working for free, and Georgia Innocence Project did not have the budget to pay him. So he moved to Belgium. Then I came on in the summer of 2015, and I was just volunteering for the summer before I looked for full-time work in the fall. And I started on an Alabama case and then moved to Joey's case probably mid-July and was actually kind of put off by the case at first. It doesn't fit the pattern of many of our other cases. He was a wealthy client at the time that the crime occurred. I mean, he was hiring the best private attorneys in the area, if not considered one of the best in the state, Bobby Lee Cook's firm. He drove fast cars and was kind of a punk, and there was just an awful lot of drama and cell phone records that I didn't understand. And I was like, I don't want to work on this case. You know, I worked on it probably for about 40 hours, and then I was only working part-time, and then my time was coming to an end when I was ready to go back to being a public defender. And I told Georgia Innocence Project I was leaving, And they said, you know, we'd really like you to stay and work on this case some more, as well as some of our other cases. We found a bit of money and we can pay you to stay, if you will. So I did. And from that point forward, I got more involved in Joey's case and started taking a closer look and just got more and more and more intrigued and fascinated and horrified and hooked. Every lead I followed, every direction the case took me, showed that what was the initial impression turned out not to be accurate. Then it came to the end of the year of 2015, and it became clear that we kind of had a real problem legally in Joey's case. He's exhausted all of his appeals. He had a state and federal habeas in which his attorney argued actual innocence and ineffective assistance of his trial counsel, and he lost that. He doesn't have really any more legal options in Georgia short of uncovering new evidence. And when you're looking at what amounts to essentially a drive-by shooting from, you know, 16 years ago, when you've only got one part-time attorney working on the case and the family is out of money and the project doesn't have money. I was paying for the open records requests myself. I was paying my own gas to get to Rome and back every week. And so we talked with Joey and his family and said, look, we don't know where this is going to go, because to get a law firm invested in this and doing their own investigation on this level of case, the number of witnesses and the complexity is going to be extremely difficult, if not impossible. And we want to tell you about this podcast that we've been listening to. We want to reach out to them. They're calling for submissions for their season two, and we think that yours might be a good case. So the first time we talked about it, we decided not to do the podcast. But after I probably investigated it about a month and a half more after that, and that's when I really started seeing that these things weren't panning out. And so at that point, we're like, you know what? It's worth it, because this is what he needs. He needs to get his story out there. He needs people listening who can call in tips, call in things that they remember, just fill in the blanks of what happened. So that's when we talked to Joey about it. We went to the prison and talked to him. We talked to his family, and nobody had any idea what a podcast was, but now they do, and they're excited about it. And we talked with them in depth about the legal implications of involving the podcast, which are many, in that if we turn over thousands and thousands of pages of documents in the case and open Joey up to being investigated and interviewed, where we can't control the content of what goes out, that's potentially dangerous to our client. So we fully explained that. And we also told him, you're going to lose your attorney-client privilege. These documents aren't confidential anymore. Anytime you bring in an outside person like a reporter, there's no attorney-client privilege in the conversations. But he was not afraid for a second. He was like, let's do it. I have nothing to hide. So we did, and we made the pitch to Undisclosed Podcast and heard back the next day with questions and questions and questions that Susan had a lot of questions that took a long time to answer. But when we were done with that, it was probably only about 48 hours. And Susan said that you were taking our case.
I wanted to ask you a quick question, though, as you were talking about, I mean, right now at the end, you were talking about, you know, kind of the risks of doing this, especially what if your client isn't innocent? And as somebody who's been on this case, I want to ask you about Joey.
As a person or his case?
Both.
As a person, I am amazed by him all the time, as I am all of our exonerees and clients who are still imprisoned, it pretty much seems to a T that they do not have the anger and rage and frustration when they talk that I would think I would have. It's kind of this understanding. I understand from all of them that they go through this at the beginning, that, you know, it's a process and they go through many stages. But by the time we get to them years later, either when we're fighting to prove their innocence or after they've been exonerated, they all, including Joey, and I was really struck that it also included Joey because he really was kind of a punk back at the time and seemed not to have much insight into what was happening at the time. And now he really gets it. Like, he understands that because he was such a fighter, because he was kind of a show-off and a hothead, he was easy to target and easy for people to dislike and rally around him and isolate him as someone who could have committed this crime. I suppose it's true of anyone's criminal record. It reflects their character. But I think especially for Joey, he's got things in there like drag racing, speeding. He speeds so fast he would get on probation and then speed again and get threatened with getting thrown in jail. I know he had shot a paintball gun at someone when he was a lot younger, and there might have been something related to that, but I can't even remember. It's all so insignificant.
It wasn't his criminal reputation that was the real issue. It was the fact that he was enough of a hothead loudmouth to give various people reason to dislike him. And even if they didn't dislike him much or even were friends with him before the murder, after the murder, they just focused on these incidences of him being a hothead. And that's all they talk about.
And he takes full responsibility for that and doesn't actually blame anybody for it. I mean, he blames Stanley Sutton, and I do too. But he's like, I understand why they looked at me. They made a mistake. They made a grave mistake. And I just want people to now give me a chance to show the mistake that was made. There's a really interesting, great interview with his friend, Delaine Roach, which I just found the most endearing of all the interviews that we've had. And he talked about how Joey always wore his heart on his sleeve. And you can see that now, too. And he doesn't really have any filters.
Those were the words I was going to use, no filter. I remember one incident when we were talking to him, and we were not alone. There was someone listening, and we're like, Joey, let's chill out for a bit. Let's not talk about stuff about your case. That lasted like 20 seconds, and then he's like back to like loudly talking about stuff again. We're like, Joey, quiet. He's not scared to talk. I can see why he was not afraid of the podcast when you talked to him about it, because when he says he has nothing to hide, he doesn't.
Half of your question of how I feel about his case.
Yeah.
One of the things that first struck me, there were a few things that made me sort of push aside all the like crime novel drama associated with his case. You know, I was a public defender for years, so I've seen lots and lots of cases. And one of the things that struck me is Joey knew for a long time that they were investigating him for murder and that this might come down. But I think he was so confident that he didn't do it and that the truth would come out that it didn't actually ever really worry him. I mean, it did a little bit. I think it was unsettling to have the police focus on you and all the rumors and things like that. But I don't think he ever actually thought he'd be arrested for it. And when he was arrested, to read the police report about what happened is really astounding.
I was like, okay, traffic stop. I wasn't thinking about this whole murder thing. And then when he pulled me over, he stepped up to my car and he put a gun in my face. He was like, don't move, don't move.
He kept repeating, what? What? You're arresting me for what? When someone tells you something and it's just so foreign to anything that you can imagine, and you have to have them repeat it over and over again. That is what happened when Joey was arrested. And then he started vomiting.
They put me in the back of the cop car, and I was upset. I was nervous. You know, I was like, it freaked me out, really. And while I was in the cop car, I was like, what's going on? He's like, don't play stupid. You know what's going on. And I got real nervous. You know, when I get nervous, I throw up. I used to throw up before football games. Before I got into a fight, I would throw up. You know, I got real nervous and I threw up in the back of the cop car.
So all this time, as he was being interviewed over time and other people were interviewed, like, he never had the sense that he was the main suspect?
Oh, he knew.
He knew.
Okay.
I think he very much knew, but I think he believed in the system. Like, he knew they were looking at him, but I don't think he knew where he could end up. He didn't understand the significance of having Stanley Sutton on your tail trying to prove that you committed this murder.
When I got downtown, the officer, he was like, you're at your new home or one of your new homes or something. And then they took me in the downtown station. I went up the elevator and they took me in this room. I guess it was an interrogation room or whatever. And Stanley Sutton and Bill Shiflett were there. And Stanley Sutton was like, have a seat. He was being like real smart alecky, like, have a seat. And I was like, yeah, I sit down. He's like, you want to help yourself or you want to ruin the rest of your life? And I told him, I said, I don't have anything to say to you. I want my attorney. He's like, oh, you're going to play that game. I was like, what do you mean play that game? I was like, you know I didn't do this. He's like, I don't care if you did it. I don't care if you did it. You don't need to be on the street.
The other thing was his comments at sentencing. The passion that he had in his voice, pleading with the judge to understand that until the day he dies, he will keep proclaiming that he is innocent and he did not commit this crime, and that justice has not been done for the family of the victim by imprisoning Joey Watkins for a crime he did not commit. That was another thing to me that I was like,
I wish so much we could play that clip, but the Floyd County Superior Court has decided that trial audio is not a public record, and they have no obligation to make it available.
Despite giving us the trial audio to begin with, and giving us all the trial audio on Mark Free's case.
Again, that was Claire Gilbert from the Georgia Innocence Project, and hers is a voice you'll be hearing quite a bit of in this season. So, Susan, you're the only one, actually, of the three of us who have not just spoken to Joey, but you actually got a chance to meet him, right? So can you tell us a little bit about your impressions of him?
My conversations with Joey aren't really conversations so much as friendly depositions, because we only have limited time to talk. So most of the time, I'm just kind of peppering him with questions over and over. You can actually tell sometimes by the end of the time we talk, he just sounds tired by the end after spending a couple hours answering long series of questions from me. Like Claire mentioned, one of the things I've been struck by is just his openness and his total lack of fear about anything in his case. The only times he thinks he knows something or remembers something, he's happy to talk. He'll go on and tell everything he knows about it. The only times I've ever seen any kind of hesitation with him is when I start trying to get him to talk about something he doesn't recall. And it kind of reminded me of a line from Serial about Anon and him not wanting to speculate on things he didn't know. And Joey has a similar approach sometimes. If he thinks he remembers, he's happy, he's off to the races. But if I start pushing him on a question he doesn't have a firm memory of, that's the only time he's not happy to talk. And he's just very careful to make sure he knows what I'm trying to ask about.
So as somebody who's like maintained his innocence from the beginning, has he ever offered you like any alternate theories or suspects?
At times, over the years, he's had various theories. Things have changed in the case. Things have changed what he's known. So he has had theories over the years. So a lot of it, what happened, though, is there's just so much more information now than there ever has been in this case. He's never seen most of the stuff we have now. It's all news to him. So a lot of the time, he's learning of things for the first time important things, big things in this case for me and Claire when we talked the day of. So
how come you haven't had it? I mean, I thought he's had other attorneys and he's had federal habeas. He's had so many things going through court. Like, how come none of these files were, or is it, or was it just they had it and they just didn't discover certain discrepancies?
Well, for some reason, the notes in this case, the police notes, never made it to the defense attorney's hands. They asked for them, they wanted them, but they were never given over. Only very late in 2015 did Claire get them for the first time, and they were pretty eye-opening. A lot of what the police did back then, let's just say it would have, I think it would have changed the outcome of the case had his attorneys been able to use that or know of it in the first place.
Does he seem angry to you, like he blames people?
He seems shocked. He just, when he learns of new stuff. So the other night, after the first episode of Undisclosed aired, he was talking to his mom. His mom, I was interviewing his parents, and his mom like stepped aside for a phone call and just kept talking. And then at the very end, she's like, oh, that was Joey. I'm like, you could have mentioned that. And I didn't talk to him. He just briefly mentioned that he like wanted me to know. You know, I've never heard that before, right? I've never heard that audio. I had no idea they were saying those things. And I think he felt a need to reassure me or just to explain to me that that was all news to him. I'm like, I know, Joey, you never got this before. I mean, I just can't imagine having spent 16 years in prison and suddenly a decade and a half later, for the first time, you're hearing about big things in your case, like huge things that were there all along and just no one ever mentioned it to you because no one ever gave your attorneys the information or your attorneys never picked up on it. And at this point, there's a lot of subjects that Joey just can't help with because he was never involved in anything involved, like Arias' investigation he just has no connection to that are still relevant to his case. And we're kind of on our own there because he just can't help. That's not something he has ever had knowledge of in the first place.
We're going to pause for a minute just to hear from our second sponsor this week, The Great Courses.
Undisclosed is a podcast about the search for truth in a convoluted, complicated, sometimes misdirected criminal justice system. Susan, Colin, and Rabia are always searching for the one detail that breaks the whole case wide open. The search for truth is important to the Undisclosed team, and if you're listening to Undisclosed, it's probably important to you too. That's why Undisclosed thinks you should check out the Great Courses Plus video learning service. The service was built for listeners just like you. It has enough content to support you as you travail on your ceaseless search for information about almost any topic your mind can conceive. That information includes over 7,000 video lectures presented by top professors, and the Great Courses Plus video series gives you access to all of them. If you don't want to take my word for it, then how about this? The Great Courses Plus will give Undisclosed listeners a special opportunity to watch hundreds of their courses for free. That means you can check out hundreds of great video series at no cost to you. So the one I'd recommend shouldn't be a surprise to Undisclosed fans. That's right, I'm suggesting you watch The Everyday Gourmet, Rediscovering the Lost Art of Cooking, a video series created in partnership with the Culinary Institute of America. The series is providing me with valuable techniques from a master chef. I will use those techniques to outcook the smack-talking, non-baking, biryani boiling, samosa frying, Undisclosed mega-host you all know as Rabia Chaudhry. I am committed to becoming the best chef on this program, and The Everyday Gourmet is making sure I do just that. Yesterday, I learned how to boil an egg, and tomorrow, I will make flan. Watch yourself, Rabia. Seriously, though, I love cooking, and that's why I love The Great Courses Plus. I want you all to love it, too. Because you listen Undisclosed, when you sign up for the courses, you'll immediately get a free month of unlimited access to all of their lectures. All you have to do to start your free trial today is to go to thegreatcoursesplus.com/undisclosed. Simple, right? So go try it. Remember, thegreatcoursesplus.com/undisclosed. Let's get back to the team.
My true love lies in a narrow grave, in the pines where the sun never shines. She snow lies deep on my true lover's grave, in the pines, in the pines, in the pines, in the pines, in the pines.
Now, let's talk about our trip to Rome, Georgia.
Dar.
Dar, what?
Dar.
Oh, dear, okay. I'm like, what?
You want to shoot me a dar?
Turn left onto Georgia 101 South Rockhart Highway Southeast.
There are bears.
There are, like,
my small black bears.
There was a bear once in Atlanta.
Oh, really? In the city?
It got lost, I think. It didn't make it too far. It didn't make it across the perimeter, because that's where I saw it dead.
Yeah,
so we saw an armadillo when we were here.
Continue on Georgia 101 South.
Look, they only exist like in a desert.
Nah, we also have coyotes now.
It's kind of beautiful here.
Coyotes have made it like way past here. Only they're like the coy wolf, like murder coyotes, because they came from like Canada or whatever.
Did you just say murder coyotes?
Yeah, I mean they're mostly coyote but part wolf. And they're a little more murdery than the
murderous.
They're a little more murdery than typical coyote.
What do they murder?
People and pets. And people die from them.
They've killed people?
Yeah, not the ones here, but you know the coy wolf hybrids. Pecans, peanuts, peaches.
Oh, I should have been Georgia peaches before I leave.
It's a peaches. Yeah. There's lots of, I don't have no idea. Usually on the roadside, there's lots of like peanuts and peaches.
Yeah. I'm not from Rome. I grew up in Atlanta, but my mother and her family are from Rome originally. But most of my time in Rome was as a child. I actually hadn't been back there since my grandmother passed away in 2011. So for me, this case has been interesting to go back to Rome and see it now from a very, very different point of view. But growing up, Rome for me was just hanging out with my grandparents and my cousins. My parents would ditch me up there for a couple weeks during the summer and whatnot. I'd go to summer camp up there.
Do you remember this case? How old were you when this happened?
I would have been 15, but I don't recall it. And my aunt and uncle, my relatives didn't recall it either. I'm sure at the time they would have heard of it. There's not that many murders in Rome. But Rome, it's not a tiny town. It's big-ish, relatively, for, a small Georgia town.
It's all relative.
I just remember I had a main street. And to me, it was really the only sort of main street I spent much time on or was familiar with. I thought it seemed very quaint. I remember my grandmother used to take me to the bank, and they would always have the little vacuum tubes and shoot out, her money and documents, and then they had to add a sucker to it. I thought it was so cool. So I don't really know Rome as an adult, although I'm learning it pretty well now.
I thought it was interesting, when we were there with you, and you've been reaching out to a lot of potential witnesses, people involved in the case, including jurors and stuff. There were times when I remember you reached the wrong person, but they'd be like, oh, but I know who you're talking about. I mean, so it seems like even though it's not a small town, people tend to kind of know each other a little bit.
I have gotten stuck on the phone a few times now where I was trying to reach witness, and I'd get a wrong number. And the person on the other end would be like, well, I'm gonna be able to help you. Can you tell me more about them? I'll try and trying to politely get off the phone as they try and help me track down this person they never heard of.
I am an attorney that's looking into a case that she came up on a list of people that had some information about it, and I was hoping to talk to her.
Yes, so the case I'm looking into was a case from 2001.
I believe so. And I wanted to ask if I have the right person. I wanted to talk to her about that. All right, thank you so much.
Or once I had a conversation with someone who kept asking questions as if they knew them, and they got to the end and said, nope, never heard of them, but I'll keep an eye out for you.
Yeah, that sounds like a small town to me.
Yeah.
You know, city folk are like, I don't got time for this. No, thank you. Bye. Click.
And once I mentioned I have family up there, of course, that's everyone wants to figure out who they are, if they know, if they got the connections there. So,
yeah, like I said, it's all relative. To me, those are all the hallmarks of kind of small town America. And I grew up in small town America, and I love it.
Yes, we traveled to Rome, Georgia. This was in June of this year, and it was a good opportunity to meet with people involved in the case. Obviously, we met with Claire, Joey's attorney. We met with various witnesses, jurors on the case. We had an especially interesting conversation, Claire and myself, with a former employee of the Georgia Bureau of Investigation that you'll hear about more later. But I think it was a really good experience to see in person all the different sites mentioned in these trial transcripts and the documents and get a sense of what we were dealing here with this case.
Susan, how many trips have you made to investigate the case now to Rome?
I don't even remember now. The benefit for me is that my parents are in Atlanta still, so I've been able to come down here, and I was quite a few days now. I have worked until like 4 or 5 and then gone to Rome in the evenings to knock on doors and try and find people.
I wonder if people now, like the talk has started spreading in the town of, hey, did the tall blonde girl come visit you?
Last night I was went to someone's house to talk to them, and he was saying, like, you know, no one has ever been asking about this case till a couple weeks ago when an officer went up to Calhoun and asked my ex-wife about it. And I was like, I'm pretty sure that was me, and I'm not a police officer. So that's getting around that someone's asking about the case.
Well, I will say that, you know, a number of times, and Susan was more nervous about me being there than I was. And the only reason I was there was any, you know, sense of nerves was because just, you know, I'm very visibly Muslim and it's a small town and maybe people don't, you know, they might be a little bit uncomfortable. But honestly, it was people were really friendly. And for me, it was really impactful to meet his parents, especially. And that is when it all became very real to me. And until now, yeah, it was an interesting case, and we've been hearing about it through Susan. But it wasn't until, like, we hung out with his mom and dad that I was like, this is, like, very, very important stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Robbie, I think that you've commented, and I noticed the same thing, is just that his parents have fought so hard and spent so much time and money on the case, and it really seemed to have worn on them. Having fought this for so many years, and just you could hear it in their voice, you could see it in their mannerisms.
So it sort of came out of the blue when he was arrested. It was just a
I didn't believe this whole thing was going on. I was like,
right,
in another world. I could not believe that they actually charged my son with hearsay.
I still don't understand how they got away with it. To this day, I don't understand.
I appreciate everything y'all are doing. Sure. No family. I'm about $1.5 million so far.
Wow.
Yeah, and so I've met his parents a few times now. And the other night, on Monday, when episode 1 was released, we had a listening party down in Emory. Joey's family was there, and some people with GIP and people who knew about the case. And I was feeling a bit nervous before. I mean, it's a new season, new episode, and I was probably a little bit jittery. And at one point, his mom put her hand on my shoulder and was like, it's going to be great, I'm sure. Don't worry. I'm like, why are you comforting me? you should be the nervous one right now. And she was just very sweet and very trying to reassure me when I probably shouldn't have been.
That is very sweet. And she also, to me, my impression was that she seemed just more kind of calm. From the father, I got a much greater sense of just agitation and, you know, just being upset in general. Our listeners, we have a YouTube channel, and we hope you subscribe to it. And we're going to have videos from our trip and other things that we're going to put up there. And one of those videos is actually us as we meet the parents. So you can check it out there. So it was really important for me to meet Joey's parents. Colin and I both wanted to meet Joey, and we weren't able to, and I hope we can in the future. But of course, the real purpose of this is to actually lend a hand in the investigation that really Susan's been taking a lead on and determine not just if Joey's innocent, but how do we prove his innocence then. So Susan's taken a lot of trips to interview witnesses, and on this trip, Colin and I got to meet some too.
You remember Susan, Colin Miller, Rabia Chaudhry, and Zoe Miller. This is Rabia and Colin's first time here, and Zoe's. And so, yeah, they're going to drive the route, and we're talking to witnesses and, you know, kind of stuff like that.
This has been it's been a non-linear investigation. A lot of starts and stops, and a lot of unexpected detours down leads that at first seem like nothing, and you start looking at it, and you're like, well, that's going to be a whole new section of us look into. But there really has been a really reoccurring pattern of who will talk to us and who will not. And a lot of people have been very happy to talk to us. Most don't remember much, or I think they don't remember much, but trying to remember a lot, it's pretty important. But there definitely has been a pattern of people who are not willing to say a word to us. People that testified at trial or were investigating or had some role of the case that was critical. And unfortunately, we've hit a wall with a lot of them.
Should we wait another, like, 5 minutes? It's only 1:05. I feel like maybe we're booking it too soon.
I mean, she would answer, wouldn't she?
I would think so. You could text. She seemed to respond to text.
Yeah, maybe one last text.
Just tell her, hey,
I mean, she hasn't responded to the last 4 texts.
I know, but...
Let's just slowly make our way out to the car, and then when we get to the car, I'll say, you know what?
Sauntering.
Let's dial
out. I'll just say, let us know when you want to talk, if and when you want to talk.
Yeah.
There was one witness we tried to go to a couple times, and Claire and I have gone together. No one had answered the door. And then one evening, while we were all in town, we were talking to another witness. Claire's like, I'm going to give it one more go, just to go see. We left a note before on the car windshield but hadn't heard back. So she went over and realized that this time someone had at least been at the house. Here's what happened when she finally talked to him.
So Claire has returned from her mission.
Okay.
And what happened when you saw the truck was moved?
So I went to knock on the door, and the TV was on loud. And so I knocked. No answer. I rang the doorbell. No answer. I knocked again. And then I kept smelling like someone was grilling. So I was like, oh, maybe he's out back grilling. So I walked around back. He's not out there. So I went back, rang the doorbell. No answer. So I went across the street just to ask a different neighbor if, make sure we had the right house. And again, didn't speak English. But then I started asking her in Spanish if he lives there, and she started talking to me in fluent English. And then I went back, and I was going to drive away, and I was like, you know, I'm going to try one more time. So I went and rang the doorbell, and this time the doorbell wouldn't ring, so I knocked on the door really loud, and then he opened it, and he said, Gilbert! And I said, yes? And he's standing there, and he has on a white T-shirt with an eagle on it and an American flag, and says, proud to be an American. And he's like, I ain't going to talk to you. I got nothing to say to you. This is your official cease and desist. And then he slammed the door, and that's it.
There are definitely good days and bad days. I've had days up there where I have driven... I only want to know how many miles, and had no one home, no one answered the phone, came home, nothing done. And some days it seems like everything aligns and you feel super efficient. You go to 5 doors and get 5 witnesses on the record. So Colin and Rabia had to head off Sunday afternoon, but Claire and I stayed up a few hours extra to try and rank up some more witnesses. And one of them was a police officer that had actually worked in a connected case back in 2000. He had a lot of things to say and gave some very helpful advice. Unfortunately, I think a lot of it was lost on us.
I feel like I just had a conversation in code where he thinks I'm speaking the code and I'm acting like I'm speaking the code, but I'm not speaking the code.
That is, oh my gosh, there's no better way to describe exactly how I feel after that conversation. I feel like he was giving us lots of sage advice that we totally didn't understand.
We're nodding and nodding. I asked one question, he's like, well, what we just talk about? Remember that? I'm like, what did we just talk about?
And that's what I was thinking. And I'm like, I hope Susan knows what we just talked about, because I have no clue.
They just told us something very important.
And one thing that happened a couple of times was there were certain names or people or that would come up, and all of a sudden the folks you're talking to would be like, oh, wait a minute, like maybe I don't want to mess with that, or you shouldn't mess with that, or you should be careful. So it seemed like, you know, there might be some potentially dangerous characters that we might have to investigate or interview. And so we ended up getting a little bit paranoid once in a while.
A guy, like, stares at us. Not even meanly, probably. Just stared at us. And I'm like, drive, drive, Colin, drive.
Yeah, he was staring.
He was just kind of like, what's going
on?
He was staring. Yeah, you'd stare, I guess, if somebody was, like, weirdly idling in front of your house.
Yeah, we'd be staring, too.
Yeah. He was staring pretty intently.
Yeah,
though.
I'd say no. It's...
I was not getting a great vibe from that stare.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And given that we're not certain it's the right place.
Yeah.
In our defense, first, Colin and I were the only ones who really saw that stare. I'm just saying. And second, we would not be the first people investigating this case to get shot at. a previous investigator a few years back did go to someone's house and a gun was fired. It's not clear who it was aimed at, but given that background, our paranoia is at least a little bit justified.
Susan, can I just tell you, this is the first I'm hearing of that, so thanks for the heads up.
Oh, and I forgot to tell you that.
Yeah, and I personally thought the stair was, because I was pretty sure we were blocking his driveway, but I could be totally wrong.
A lot of people have already started asking us what can happen in Joey's case now. After all, the Georgia Innocence Project gave us the case because they had exhausted all the legal options. Well, essentially what we're doing is we're looking for one of two things. One is newly discovered evidence. Not necessarily evidence the state had, but new evidence. A new suspect, new physical evidence, forensic evidence, etc. If new evidence can be found, that can reopen the case. The other thing is the classic we mentioned in season one, and that's a Brady violation. If the state was in possession of evidence that was both material and exculpatory, that Brady evidence could be the basis for a new trial. And what we can say at this point is we've been working on a few possible leads, and we feel better than ever about the possibility of reopening this case and getting Joey a new trial.
The witness list in this case was over 100 names long. And there were many more than that who were interviewed, talked to, or we have notes about, but never testified at trial. In other words, in a town like Rome, this is a case a lot of people know about and have information about. If you have anything that you'd like to share with us, you can email us at undisclosedpodcast@gmail.com or call the Georgia Innocence Project at 404-373-4433.
While it's been hard for us during our investigation to nail down any evidence that Joey was ever a violent or dangerous guy, the state was able to convince a jury of that, primarily because of stories surrounding one particular witness.
If it hadn't been for Brianne, I bet we'd still be hanging out now.
Right.
According to the state's theory, the tie that binds Joey to many of his alleged transgressions is one woman, Brianne. Next time on Undisclosed.
And episode 2 is in the books. Let's thank the folks who helped put it together. Georgia Innocence Project brought Undisclosed Joey's case. By the way, thanks to everyone on the social medias using the hashtag #JusticeForJoey. Read about GIP at www.georgiainnocenceproject.org. Our sponsors for the week, thank you to Stamps.com and The Great Courses Plus. We appreciate you. Listeners, please, go check out our great sponsors and make sure you tell them that Undisclosed sent you. Ramiro Marquez and Patrick Cortez did the theme music. I've been getting down on Patrick's band Animal Weapon lately. I hope you will too. Baluki on our logo, Nina Mooser, and Christy Williams on our website. That website is at www.undisclosed-podcast.com. There, we've got people maps designed by Heidi Phelps. We've also got episode transcripts if you'd like to use those to follow along on the show. Rebecca Lavoie of Partners in Crime Media and the podcast Crime Writers On makes this show sound great. She gets help from Hannah McCarthy and the show's newest producer, Brooke Giddings. Brooke also hosts the podcast Actual Innocence, and if you haven't checked out Actual Innocence yet, you're missing some great stories about exoneration. Methil Telhan does so many things for the show behind the scenes that if I listed them here, Rebecca would probably yell at me for making the credits longer than they should be. So I'll just say, thanks, Methil. To our listeners, thank you, and thanks for promoting the show on social media. You found us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at our handle, UndisclosedPod, and you spurred the conversation using the hashtag Undisclosed. Don't forget, if you've got questions for John over at the Undisclosed Addendum, send them our way. Use the hashtag UDAddendum, but try to get them in before Tuesday morning because that's when we record. Undisclosed's executive producer is Dennis Robinson. I hope to see you next week for episode 3. Until then...